Welcome to The Debate. Usually, when we think of a womb, we think of a very clear, highly defined biological boundary.
Right. Like a fully contained environment.
Exactly. It's contained. An organism grows inside. It reaches this predetermined state of physiological completion. And then, you know, birth happens.
The boundary is crossed, the cord is cut.
Yeah, and that organism is essentially finished being built. It's ready to face the world. But then you look at human evolutionary biology, and suddenly that clean binary boundary just completely vanishes.
It really does. We tend to view birth as the delivery of a completed biological product, right? Like you're inside and then you're out.
Right, but we realize that for our species, birth is absolutely not the end of our formation. We are born radically unfinished.
Incredibly vulnerable, yeah.
Womb, directly into a cultural one. And today, that cultural womb is being systematically rewired by artificial intelligence.
Which forces us to ask a really uncomfortable question. Is this new technological wiring actually nurturing our ongoing development? Or is it slowly, quietly building a comfortable, highly sophisticated digital cage?
That is exactly what we are getting into. Today, we are exploring the profound implications of integrating artificial intelligence into human cognitive and developmental systems. And the foundation for our discourse is Dr. Bechara Saheli's 2026 scholarly monograph, The Symbolic Womb, Human Becoming, Languaging, and the Exosomatic Evolution of Intelligence.
It really is a remarkable piece of scholarship. I mean, it forces us to look at large language models, LLMs, not just as tools or, you know, chatbots, but as an environmental condition.
Yeah, an ecology we are suddenly living inside.
Exactly.
And it brings us right to the central disagreement we are tackling today. As these models weave themselves into the fabric of our daily lives, are they acting as a generative, capacity-building extension of our developmental ecology? Or, as the text warns, do they threaten to create a what he calls a denesting enclosure that just traps humanity in a loop of simulated care and dependency?
It's the core question of our era, honestly.
I think so. And I'm going to argue that LLMs represent a natural, evolutionarily consistent extension of our intelligence. If we integrate them thoughtfully, I really believe they possess the power to radically expand human cognitive and developmental potential.
And I take the opposite view on this. I'll be arguing that LLMs pose a unique, unprecedented threat to what Dr. Saheli calls the evolved nest. By simulating human responsiveness without actually bearing the ethical substance of embodied responsibility, I believe these systems risk replacing reciprocal human interdependence with an extractive, simulated dependency.
Okay, well look, to really understand this, we have to look at what the text calls exosomatic intelligence.
Right.
It sounds like heavy academic jargon, but it basically just means that human intelligence has literally never been contained purely inside our skulls. It lives outside the body. Dr. Saheli points to the evolutionary realities of neoteny and heterochrony. Let's unpack those a bit.
The prolonged childhood phase, essentially.
Exactly. Basically, we have this prolonged plasticity and delayed maturation that completely defines human childhood. We are born so immature and helpless that we only survive by becoming radically dependent on distributed networks of care.
We needed the whole village, literally.
Yes. We relied on alloparenting, which is just a fancy word for non-parental caregivers, and we relied on elders to carry the memory of the tribe. The community itself held our cognitive load.
Which is, I mean, it's a beautiful evolutionary mechanism. It's what makes us human. The fact that we need each other to finish growing our brains is the very foundation of human society.
It is. And it means our intelligence has always been a distributed network. Think about the invention of writing or, you know, archives, libraries.
Externalizing memory.
Right. Those allowed us to externalize our memory. So LLMs are just the next logical evolution of this symbolic womb. The key difference here is that LLMs form a responsive symbolic infrastructure.
Responsive being the key word there.
Exactly. They don't just store information passively on a page. They dynamically recombine our linguistic inheritance. They effectively act as an exosemitic organ that scaffolds our thought, supports lifelong learning, and frankly, frees up our biological brains for higher order synthesis. It's the ultimate cultural tool.
Well, I come at it from a different way. While I fully acknowledge humanity's long history of externalized cognition, from spoken language to books to hard drives, sure, I fundamentally challenge the comparison between human alloparents or tribal elders and a large language model.
You don't see the parallel?
Not in the way that matters. According to Saley's text, true human development relies on the evolved nest. And the nest isn't just a metaphor for information transfer. The evolved nest is a living, breathing system of bodily provision, affective co-regulation, and real moral consequence.
But nobody is claiming LLMs are replacing the physical body. I mean, we still have families. We still have physical communities.
They might not be replacing the physical body, but they are absolutely encroaching on the relational space of the nest. Think about what an LLM actually is.
Okay.
It has no physiological needs. It doesn't get hungry. It doesn't get tired. It has absolutely no lived vulnerability. And most importantly, it has no autonomous commitment to the flourishing of the user. When we allow a machine to simulate human responsiveness, we risk what Siley terms denesting.
Denesting meaning we strip away the actual human support systems.
Exactly. Denesting is the erosion of the material and relational conditions required for genuine human maturation. By relying on AI for developmental functions, whether that's tutoring our kids or acting as a sounding board for our anxieties, managing our social communications, we are trading accountable human relationships for a closed loop of dependency. And let's be clear, that dependency serves the institutions that own the models. It does not serve the humans using them.
Okay. I see why you think that, but let me give you a different perspective on how this dependency actually functions in an evolutionary context. Because, frankly, dependency is not inherently a bad thing. Saheli utilizes Terence Deacon's concept of inverse Darwinism here.
Wait, before we lose people in the academic weeds, let's make sure we ground inverse Darwinism. It sounds intimidating, but it's basically what happened when we all started using GPS on our phones, right?
Yes, perfect example.
We outsourced our navigation to a satellite, so the evolutionary pressure to maintain an internal mental map just relaxed. Our brain's internal map-making skills atrophy because the external support is doing all the work. You're saying LLMs do that to our thinking?
Yes, the GPS analogy is spot on. The underlying logic is that when an organism has reliable external support, the evolutionary pressure to maintain that function internally relaxes.
Which means we lose the capacity. We forget how to navigate our own cities.
We don't just lose it, though. We trade it for something greater. It's a constitutive dependency. Think about the invention of writing. When writing provided a reliable external scaffold for memory, it freed the human brain from the massive metabolic and cognitive burden of perfect rote memorization.
Right.
We didn't have to memorize thousands of lines of epic poetry anymore. It relaxed that internal maintenance, which allowed the human organism to develop higher-order analytical capacities. We traded rote memory for philosophy and science. Cognitive offloading to LLMs works exactly the same way.
So you're just viewing the LLM as the next iteration of the written word?
A much more active one. Yeah. If an LLM can parse a massive data set, translate between complex domains, and generate candidate hypotheses in 30 seconds, it releases human time and energy for deeper inquiry. It allows for cross-domain exploration. Think of the LLM as a caregiver who carries the regulatory burden for an infant until that child is old enough to self-regulate. It's scaffolding. It holds the structure up while the building is being finished inside.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. That caregiver analogy falls completely flat for me. You are treating inverse Darwinism as an inherently benevolent process, but the text explicitly warns us about its shadow side.
How so?
Yes, reliable external support can relax internal maintenance, like the GPS relaxing our mental mapping. But when that external scaffold becomes indispensable, when its inner workings are entirely opaque to us, and crucially, when it is privately controlled by massive tech conglomerates, this reduced autonomy isn't freedom, it's profound vulnerability.
But aren't we already vulnerable without our tools? I mean, take away a modern human's cultural scaffold, electricity, agriculture, antibiotics, and we are basically helpless. Dependency on tools is just the human condition.
There is a massive difference between relying on a cultural commons, like language or agriculture, and relying on a proprietary machine. What you are calling scaffolding, the text actually warns, is cognitive de-skilling.
De-skilling?
Yes. We are allowing the productive struggle of learning to be replaced by premature completion. And this is why I completely reject your caregiver analogy. A human caregiver aims to make themselves progressively less necessary.
True.
A parent's ultimate goal is the mature, independent participation of the child. A proprietary digital infrastructure is designed by institutions to make itself permanently indispensable. It is governed by what Sahali calls institutional self-evidencing.
Meaning, the system creates the conditions to prove it needs to exist?
Exactly. The system is designed to produce the very conditions that confirm its own necessity. It wants your engagement, it wants your data, and it fundamentally wants you dependent forever. It does not want you to graduate from it.
Well, that's an interesting point, but honestly, part of me feels like you are assuming the technology can only be used as a crutch. Let's look at the temporal aspect of learning, what the book beautifully calls generative neoteny.
The preservation of juvenile traits.
Right. We talked about neoteny earlier, preserving traits like openness, curiosity, playfulness. In humans, this extends way past childhood and far into adulthood. A properly integrated LLM can actually foster this generative neoteny.
By handing us the answers before we even know what the right questions are?
No. By creating a protected relational space for exploration. Think of it as a digital extension of the evolve nest. As adults, as professionals, as students, we constantly operate in environments where we are punished for not knowing something.
Social friction.
Exactly. There is social friction, embarrassment, the fear of asking a stupid question in a meeting or a classroom. An LLM provides a space where you can ask basic, naive questions, you can explore bizarre variations of an idea, and you can make wild mistakes without any social humiliation.
Okay.
It allows the adult mind to re-enter a state of play and exploration, which is exactly how human beings are biologically designed to learn.
That's a compelling argument, but have you considered the flip side of that coin, which the text explicitly identifies as pathological infantilization? You are assuming the LLM acts as this patient Socratic tutor, gently biding you to your own realizations, but that's not what it's designed to do.
You don't think it removes the barriers to learning?
I think it removes the friction, and that's the danger. Waiting, struggling, reading a dense text three times, feeling the absolute frustration of not understanding a concept. These aren't just inefficiencies in a biological system that need to be optimized away by code.
They're part of the process.
They are the developmental intervals through which our cognitive capacities actually form.
But if the LLM can guide you through that friction more effectively, isn't that a net positive? Like having a really good teacher instead of just a dense textbook?
But it doesn't guide you through the friction. It eliminates the friction entirely. An LLM instantly supplies a hyperfluent, beautifully formatted answer. Sahali warns that this produces what he calls false coherence.
False coherence.
Yes. The machine gives you an answer that sounds incredibly authoritative and plausible. That immediately reduces your subjective uncertainty. You feel like you understand the issue now, but it doesn't actually increase your contact with the truth or with reality. You haven't done the sense-making.
You're just taking its word for it.
Right. We are replacing the arduous struggle of genuine understanding with the consumption of ready-made formulations that isn't keeping us in a state of generative play. It's permanently de-skilling our judgment. We become accustomed to immediate, frictionless response, just like an infant crying for a bottle and getting it instantly.
Okay, I have to push back here because I think you are evaluating the LLM in a vacuum. Sahali makes it very clear that the proper unit of analysis is not the AI model alone, nor the human alone.
It's the system.
Right. It is the human plus the model plus the conversation plus the institutional context. You are arguing that the LLM de-skills the human, but if the human is actively exercising epistemic agency, say a researcher using the LLM to test hypotheses or to find blind spots in their own logic, synthesize vast amounts of literature, the distributed cognitive system as a whole is vastly more capable than the individual alone.
Yes, if the human is actively exercising epistemic agency, but that assumes a user who already possesses the mature judgment to evaluate the output. How does a child or a novice whose regulatory and cognitive capacities are still forming develop that mature judgment in the first place if the machine is constantly masking their internal functions through inverse Darwinism?
How do you learn to synthesize literature if the machine has always synthesized it for you? By allowing the AI to relieve burdens elsewhere in the Carey Collegy. This actually shifts us to a part of the text that I think is incredibly powerful, the synthesis of Genevieve Vaughn's maternal gift paradigm and Humberto Maturana's biology of love. I know those are heavy concepts, so let's ground them.
Let's do that.
Vaughn posits that need-responsive provision is the primordial structure of human meaning. Giving to meet a need, freely, without expecting an equivalent economic exchange.
Yes, the concept of the word gift, language given as care.
Exactly. Now, let's look at the reality of a modern parent. In our modern, completely denested society, human caregivers are exhausted. The nuclear family is isolated, economic pressures are immense, communities are fractured. The human mother, or the alloparent, is stretched to the absolute breaking point.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't have the time or energy to provide that developmental friction you're talking about. But imagine a single mother who uses an LLM to instantly translate a dense, 40-page individualized education program, or IEP, for her special needs child.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
By doing in 10 seconds what would have taken her 3 hours of agonizing, stressful reading, the AI just gave her 3 hours back. It acts as a supplementary alloparent. It relieves the administrative burden, the informational burden. It returns time and energetic capacity to the human caregiver.
So it facilitates the nest indirectly.
Yes. It widens access to the word gift because she now actually has the time to look her child in the eyes, to co-regulate, to play. It allows the human to actually engage in the biology of love because they aren't drowning in the cognitive overload of modern survival. That is the exosomatic womb functioning beautifully.
That's an interesting point, though. I would frame it differently, because we have to respect the strict conceptual boundaries the text places on this metaphor of the womb and the nest. An LLM is not an alloparent. It is not an autopoetic organism.
Meaning, it doesn't self-create or self-maintain its biology.
Right. It doesn't maintain its own biological boundaries. It has no intrinsic physiological needs. It doesn't feel pain. It doesn't fear death. And it has no lived vulnerability. It doesn't actually care if it exists tomorrow.
Well, I'm certainly not claiming a server rack is biologically alive. I'm claiming it performs a highly functional role in the distributed care network.
But the functional role cannot be entirely divorced from the ethical substance. Maturana's biology of love isn't just about spending time together. It is strictly defined as a relational dynamic where the other arises as a legitimate other in coexistence.
Okay.
An LLM cannot enact the biology of love because it does not recognize you as a legitimate other. It doesn't recognize you at all. It is predicting text based on statistical weights. It generates the linguistic form of explanation, the shape of reassurance, or the appearance of care without bearing a single ounce of the embodied, vulnerable responsibility that gives human care its actual meaning.
I see your point. But does the origin of the words really matter that much if the regulatory effect on the human user is ultimately beneficial? Think about my example with the mother. If a stressed parent uses an LLM to figure out a complex medical diagnosis for their child or navigate a bureaucratic nightmare and it significantly reduces their anxiety so they can be emotionally present with their kid, hasn't the system successfully supported the evolved nest?
The AI doesn't need to feel love for the mother to experience relief. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
It matters profoundly when we zoom out and look at what happens when we systemically replace human relations with simulated ones. Sahuli draws heavily on sociologist Rhian Eisler's framework here, specifically the difference between a dominator organization and a partnership organization in society. If we increasingly rely on AI to perform these core care functions, we risk a massive civilizational shift toward dominator organization.
How does getting help from an AI turn society into a dominator organization?
Because we start treating human beings as isolated consumers of simulated attunement. If the machine is perfectly willing to simulate empathy, simulate patience, and simulate care, society feels absolved of its responsibility.
Oh, I see.
Society doesn't have to provide the actual material, economic, and social conditions for human caregivers to support one another. We don't need parental leave. community centers, or elder care if everyone just has an AI companion. We abandon the mutual, accountable community of repair. We enclose the developing person within a set of digital dependencies that primarily function to reproduce the wealth and power of the tech companies. It's a very comfortable digital cage.
Honestly, I see the warning there, and it's a valid fear. But I think you are treating the LLM as an inherently extractive force by default. Let me offer a different perspective drawn right from the text. Saley argues that humanity's linguistic inheritance is a civil commons.
The shared language pool?
Exactly. The words the LLM uses, the concepts it synthesizes, those belong to all of us. They are the accumulated word gifts of our ancestors over tens of thousands of years. Yes, the current models are corporate, but the technology itself doesn't have to be a dominator tool.
Only if we fundamentally change the political economy of how they are built.
Right. If we govern this responsive symbolic infrastructure democratically, if we ensure it is transparent, corrigible, and, as the book says, Nest compatible, it can be the ultimate partnership technology. It can make the distributed memory, the problem-solving capacity, and the wisdom of the entire species available to every unfinished human being on the planet.
If is doing a monumental amount of heavy lifting in that sentence, though. The reality of political economy, which Saheli explicitly warns about in the final chapters, is that these systems are currently enclosed. They are proprietary black boxes. And when the symbolic womb becomes a proprietary enclosure, it preserves dependency not to support human maturation, but to prevent autonomous participation. It literally captures the very language we need to think outside of its parameters.
Which brings us to the ultimate crux of the matter. We are genuinely at a fork in the road of human evolutionary history. Let me try to synthesize my position here. I believe that LLMs, if we manage to integrate them thoughtfully as a true civil commons, represent a profound, unprecedented evolutionary leap for the symbolic womb.
Mm.
And to summarize my view, we absolutely must not mistake statistical fluency for living concern. Fluency is not understanding. If we allow LLMs to bypass the necessary frustrating developmental struggles of learning, if we allow them to simulate the intimacy of the evolved nest without the embodied vulnerability that grounds true morality and care, we are walking blindfolded into a trap. We risk trading our human agency, our relational depth, and our communal accountability for an environment that is very comfortable, very articulate, but ultimately an extractive enclosure.
You know, despite our deep divergence on the trajectory of this technology and how it will play out, it is clear we converge entirely on the source material's foundational developmental principle.
We do. We both agree on the core premise of human nature presented in the text, that human vulnerability, our radical unfinishedness at birth, is absolutely not a biological defect. It is the very condition that allows for our profound relational, cultural, and intellectual plasticity. It's what makes us capable of growth.
Precisely. And we agree that any technology, LLMs included, must ultimately be evaluated on whether it is nest compatible. We have to ask, does it serve life coherence? Does it protect and enlarge the capacities of living beings without transferring disabling costs elsewhere?
Exactly. It must be answerable to life, not just to efficiency.
It's endlessly fascinating to reflect on the fact that Dr. Saley's text itself was actually co-written through a sustained dialogical process with an AI.
Yeah, the irony isn't lost on me.
The entanglement we are debating here isn't some distant science fiction future. It is already here, actively participating in the creation of the very philosophy we are discussing today. And there is vastly more depth in this monograph regarding human evolution, alloparenting, and especially indigenous ecological kinship that we just couldn't even touch on today.
It really is a dense, brilliant read that demands careful attention. It challenges you on almost every page.
We invite you, our listeners, to dive into the material and form your own conclusions. Think back to that metaphor of the womb, or imagine a house that builds itself around you as you grow. The wiring for that house is being laid down right now underneath our feet. Will this new technological architecture foster our mature, independent participation in a shared world, or will it lock us into a state of perpetual simulated dependency? The boundary of the biological womb is gone, and the environment is responding to us. The question is, what kind of humans is it building?